Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends, Power Our Nation. And in the dust of our great founder, Joyce Riley, we will not stop. And hopefully you will not stop shopping either at Power Hour Mall, because our spring sale is in the last week, 10% off site-wide for the rest of the month. No code necessary. Discount applies at checkout. Excludes drop ship products. And you can help pay for the gas that keeps us going. Going to someplace rather unique, Victory. Because we can win. As I described earlier about the lion and the hyenas. The hyenas just like to separate and get one lion, take it down. But when the other lion or more stand up, the hyenas run. And that's what we have to do, stand up. And when we have a man who is a lion, Mark Crispin Miller from New York University, he is a lion. And he was just teaching young people critical thinking skills in his course on propaganda. And not doing it in a historical perspective, but teaching you now how to recognize those lines that they use on you. Something I got at home, and I took a course at university in it too, and I loved it. It was, you know, it's a fun course, supposed to be a fun course, to think, you know, to play and look over things. But once you think, you become dangerous. You become Orwell thought criminal. And there's nothing more dangerous to an oppressive state than the thought criminal. But that's okay. Because as they attack this lion stands up and says, that's enough of that. He's doing the right thing. I heard him on Corbett Report, and I just know I am in the presence of an honorable man. So I contacted him and asked him to come here to Power Hour and teach us about that honor and critical thinking skills. Mark Crispin Miller, we are proud to have you aboard. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your conundrums.
I will indeed, and I want to say thank you for having me on, George. Yeah, my story is kind of astonishing. At least it still astonishes me. I've been teaching at NYU for about 24 years, and for most of that time, I've taught a course on propaganda at least twice a year. It's always been very popular with the students. Mostly, I have taught it to undergraduates now and then to master's students. And as you noted in introducing me, I make very clear to the class at the very beginning of every semester that I don't treat propaganda as a remote historical phenomenon. You know, something the Nazis did, something the Bolsheviks did, something the Allies did in World War I. And we certainly talk about all that background because you need that. But our main focus is necessarily on propaganda that's in real time, or propaganda drives that are recent enough so that the students can remember them. Now, I'm just going to tell your listeners what the points are that I make crystal clear going in. I say that, and then I give them a fair warning that this can actually be kind of difficult, because nobody has trouble spotting the propaganda that they don't agree with, right? So if you ask, liberal for an example of propaganda, he or she will say Fox News. And if you ask a conservative for an example of propaganda, they'll say the New York Times or MSNBC. And they're both right, but they're only half right, because they wouldn't even think to point to any propaganda that they actually agree with, because when you agree with it, you don't see it as propaganda. You see it as information, as truth, as the news, sometimes as entertainment. But if it pushes your buttons, if it's that sophisticated and it gets to you, you're not going to see it for what it is. So I tell the class, when we study propaganda in here, you're going to have to be prepared to move out of your comfort zone. And that's not always easy. Some people have trouble with that, and that's fine. But if you want to, you know, understand it and think about it as opposed to simply being manipulated by it, you've got to make this deliberate effort to be as impartial as you can and make absolutely sure that the thing that you took for granted as absolute gospel truth is actually true. Because you're going to find as you take this course and as we study these things, that a lot that you took for granted was just false, and it wasn't your own idea. You know, it was put there. So the last thing I say to them is, you know, over the course of the semester, you're going to hear me come up with evidence for counter-narratives that may shock you, you know. This is the most important thing I'm going to say to you today and all semester. Do not believe a single word I say. I make that as clear as I can. I am not asking you to believe me. I'm not an oracle. I'm just a professor who's trying to set an example to you for a certain comprehensive, thorough, impartial research that will then allow you to make up your own mind. So don't believe me. You know, if I say something that shocks you, check it out. Look into it. Tell me if I'm wrong. In class, please, we'll argue. If you find that I'm right, you'll learn something. All right? Okay. Now, this last September, I was teaching this as usual, and I was trying to make the point that, you know, this semester, there's some things we could certainly talk about. For example, look at the way we're meeting, because we were meeting by Zoom. I said, why are we meeting like this? I mean, you hate it. I hate it. Nobody likes it. Well, obviously, we're meeting by Zoom because of the COVID crisis. And the COVID crisis has been driven by a number of propaganda themes all year. And that is not to say they're necessarily false, because propaganda does not have to be false. It can be accurate. It can even be benign, you know. A campaign to get you, you know, not to drink and drive, that's propaganda too. But when it comes to complicated matters of public health, science, medicine, propaganda, accurate or not, is only part of the story. So we could talk about the COVID crisis. There's a lot to talk about. For example, we could focus on the mask mandates. I said it may interest you to know that all the randomized controlled studies of mask wearing in hospital settings over the last 15 or 20 years, all 8 studies, actually there were 10, I didn't know that. I said all 8 of those studies, and that's the most rigorous kind of study, have found that masks are not effective at blocking the transmission of respiratory viruses, okay? I would encourage you to read those. You'll be very interested. I also encourage you to read, you know, all the recent studies finding otherwise, okay? Because over the last summer, this past summer, a lot of studies have come out. They're not randomized controlled studies. They're different kinds. They all claim to prove or find that, you know, masking really does block those viruses. All right, so I would ask you to read all of those. Now, how does a non-scientist do this, right? How do you know, as a layperson, whether or not these new studies are sound? I mean, the older ones have stood the test of time. Well, what about these new ones? So I gave them some advice. I said, you can often find scientific reviews of studies that are just out. Sometimes they're appended as comments. And something else you should do as a student of propaganda is take note of what university the study comes from, and then check to see if that university has any financial connections with Big Pharma or the Gates Foundation, because if it does, it's possible that the researchers were biased. Conflict of interest. All right, so that's just a little guidance. And this was not an assignment, George. This was just a suggestion. All right? Okay. That was it. That was the first week. We proceeded. And then I got an email from a student asking me if she could join the class late. And I said yes, as I always do. So she joined us. And, you know, the first day she was there, she spoke up once. And then second day she was there, the mask subject came up again. And this time, let me explain how it came up. When I had recommended these 8 studies, I told the class that there was a paper they could get hold of. It was a compilation of 7 of those 8 studies. So for convenience sake, I said, you can get hold of this study that was compiled by this Canadian physicist named Denis Rancourt. That's a very handy way to get hold of those 7 studies. So this other student in the class spoke up and started to attack Rancourt and attack his integrity, claim his study was deceptive, that it misrepresented. All right, I recognized all these points. And I said to him, tell me, did you happen to read the column in Psychology Today that attacks Rancourt's work? He said, yes. I said, okay. Did you read the studies? And he clearly had not read them. All right, so I took advantage of this moment to make a very helpful point, this being a propaganda course. I said, if you come across something, or you're assigned something, and it makes you uncomfortable, don't just jump to Google and do a search and seize on the first thing Google shows you, all right? Because Google, you know, Google's algorithms are set to discredit certain kinds of research and bury others, because Google happens to own 2 pharmaceutical companies. You know, I talked about Google, the problems with Google. It's got a tremendous amount of power and influence. All right. This was on a Thursday. On the following Monday, I got a call from my department chair who asked me in this accusatory tone if I had told my students not to wear masks. I said no. In fact, what I had said, I'm just remembering this now, I had said pointedly to them that first week, I am not telling you not to wear masks, okay? This is an intellectual exercise. Follow the rules. There's a strict rule at NYU, okay? So I'm not telling you how to behave. I'm telling you how to think about this stuff, okay? So I told him that I had said that, and I told him that I had encouraged the students to read these studies. And he said, well, okay, I have to tell the COVID star chamber or whatever it is, you know, at NYU. I said, all right. And I believe he told me that a student was complaining about the course on Twitter. All right. Well, I checked it out. Sure enough, this student who had joined the class late was so enraged by my suggestion that they read these studies that she called NYU's bias hotline. Now, this is all by her own account, because she did indeed go to Twitter. She told this whole story. She was so enraged that I had put them at risk. You know, I had threatened them with harm, that she called the bias hotline. The bias hotline people said, there's nothing we can do about this. And that made her even angrier. So what she did was take to Twitter to demand that NYU fire me, okay? For what she called an excessive amount of skepticism around healthcare professionals. And she also, I mean, this was not just one tweet or 2 or 3. This was a whole stream of tweets. And a lot of them were screenshots from my website, News from Underground, where I put up all kinds of information that doesn't get much of a hearing, gets blacked out by the media, you know, stuff from scientists, citizen journalists, all kinds of information. And she just took a lot of screenshots of this stuff and posted it on Twitter as self-evidently false and said it all of it came from far-right and conspiracy websites. This is completely untrue. All right, now, I've had students argue with me, you know, for years. I relish it. I welcome it. But I've never had somebody not say anything in class and then go public like that. This was unusual. But it was no big deal in itself. I mean, she has the First Amendment right to do that. I wish she hadn't, but she did. But what I did not find acceptable is that my chair, my department chair, tweeted his thanks to her and said, now this is verbatim, she had called for my termination, and he tweeted, "We as a department have made this a priority and are discussing next steps." I couldn't believe my eyes. I was flabbergasted by this. Here he was publicly speaking for the whole department, which I'm a member of, and nobody had contacted me. Nobody had asked me for my side of the story, unless you count his quick conversation with me. So I asked him to take it down. I said, you know, I can't believe you promised to act on her demand I be fired. And he said, oh, no, I didn't mean that. He wouldn't take it down. In fact, it's still up. And that was only the beginning. I mean, I'll try to make this quick, but it is an astonishing story. The next day, the doctor who advises NYU on its COVID rules, which are insanely draconian at NYU. I mean, the rules have led to many lawsuits by students and their families. The doctor who formulates those rules and the dean of my school sent my other students an email without putting me on copy, hinting that I had given them dangerous misinformation, including a list of links to what they called authoritative public health guidance, which means the CDC, studies that I had already told them to read. And then ended with a warning that they had better keep their masks on because of the strict rule, as if I had told them not to. I wouldn't even have known about this if some students in the class hadn't told me and sent me this email. This is astonishing. So here I am trying to teach my students to read stuff for themselves and make up their own minds, and these two administrators jump in, you know, kind of elbow me out of the way at the podium and tell the students what to believe. You know, which is completely authoritarian. And then, on top of that, the next day, I was urged to cancel the propaganda course for this semester, the spring, on the grounds that my film course, which I also teach, is very popular. So if I were to teach two sections of that one course instead of one section and the propaganda course as usual, the high enrollments would be good for the department. The only problem with that pretext is that both classes have the same limit of 24 students, so this was patently absurd. But I, you know, you kind of have to do what the chair wants you to do. I said, all right, you know, strictly speaking, I have no choice, but I'm doing this under protest. Okay, I could not let this go. It really galled me. It was completely wrong. And I decided, with the help of some friends, to write a petition, which went up on change.org. Your listeners can find it. Just do a search on Mark Crispin Miller, NYU, Academic Freedom, change.org, and you'll find it. And thousands of people started signing it, you know, from all over the world. All it asks for is very modest. All it asks for is that NYU respect my academic freedom and thereby set a good example for other schools. But I did this in the name of all professors, all journalists, all activists, scientists, doctors, whistleblowers who had been gagged or punished for their dissidence, and not just over the previous year of COVID when it's really become kind of a crisis of censorship, but for decades, you know. So, it went up, you know. And, hello, hi.
Doorman told me to let you know that they need this, okay?
Okay, I'll have something. Yeah, soon. Thanks. Sorry about that. What was I saying, George?
Oh, you were just talking about the petition at change.org and academic freedom.
Okay, right. So the petition went up, all right. And a lot of very eminent people signed it. I'm very pleased with that. Now, here's the most bizarre thing of all. I mean, I thought I'd seen everything. But a month after a student attacked me, almost to the day, I get an email from my dean informing me that he's going to order a review of my conduct at the request of my colleagues, who had sent him a letter, which he attached, the first I'd heard of it, demanding an expedited review of my conduct on the grounds, you know, they begin their letter by saying, we believe in academic freedom, you know, and I've learned from this experience that when somebody says that, you better hit the deck, you know, because there's a but coming, a but. They believe in academic freedom, but according to the faculty handbook, if a colleague's conduct is really heinous enough, it will nullify that colleague's academic freedom. And that was, they're arguing that was so in my case, that my conduct was so egregious that academic freedom doesn't hold for me. Now, what had I done? Well, they started out by saying that I had discouraged students from wearing masks, which, as I made clear, I didn't do. They also accused me of intimidating students who were wearing masks, which is insane because I was teaching on Zoom and nobody was wearing a mask. But that was only the beginning. That was the takeoff point. From there, they went on to accuse me of...
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, New Man of food storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
You know what my mission was when I started this, and I was so excited. I still am excited after 21 years. I said, anybody who's got mouth must use Vitamir toothpaste and mouthwash if they want to stay healthy. I'm going to make sure that it is available to anywhere I can put the product.
You got a lot of zinc in these products.
Zinc inhibits plaque growth. Zinc is also known to have an antibacterial properties. Also, zinc works to eliminate bad breath by destroying volatile sulfur compounds, such an incredible product. And
wow.
I'm so proud to say my wife did that and saved my life, saved my mouth. And she is the mother of all the people who are using a Vitamer toothpaste and mouthwash in the world.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
This week only, we're offering 10% off all products found at thepowermall.com. That's right, 10% off all Power Mall products through the end of the week. That's 10% off all Power Mall products, excluding all drop-shipped items. Call Jay right now at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or as always, buy from the good guys, buy from thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Hurry, offer valid this week only.
Welcome back, Power Hour Nation. I'm your guest host from Canada, George Freund. Joining us for the next segment is Mark Crispin Miller, the New York University professor who has dared to speak out, who has dared to actually teach people how to think, and who has dared to come. I found this great old book. Well, you know, he was talking, I'm looking up for a few things, but when you go back to the Inquisition, they had a guidebook, and that's probably this, just been rewritten a little bit. Maybe they took it out of Latin to use at NYU. Conduct of the Inquisition into Heretical Depravity. And it could, you could probably find a lot of things in there that they're throwing at him as they look into his great crimes for actually trying to get someone to think, because that's the most powerful weapon you have at your disposal is critical thinking, so that you can not just recognize propaganda, but facts from any direction, just even an errant fact that can something happen. Is this ship really unsinkable? Well, let me think about that critically for a little while. How high do those bulkheads go? So maybe I'll wait till they invent a dirigible before I go across the Atlantic, but I don't think helium gas and hydrogen gas. Maybe I'll look at those two gases and wait till they invent an airplane. You know, critical thinking can go a long way to keep you alive, to survive. And it should be fundamental that you're not taught what to think, but how to think. And that's the great, great danger you get from faculty like Mark. You know, I learned a long time ago, as I was beginning into this stuff, to learn about Operation Mockingbird, how the CIA was controlling the newspapers with hundreds of millions of dollars back in the good old Nixon days, and then a concept called COINTELPRO, and I read the great book on J. Edgar that, you know, was just like 70 years history of manipulating people, twisting things, and doing all kinds of things that are just fundamentally illegal, and just take it as a given. That's the way the world works. So I have to have critical thinking skills just in case, because I want to believe. I really do. And then the other big one is Plato. You can't go wrong with Plato, the laws of logic. You find inconsistencies. Well, your is might not be as is as they're telling you. And then, of course, the big one, the noble lie, that the state is the only institution that has the right to lie to the people or to other governments. Well, if you have the right to lie, then critical thinking skills are probably far more important. And then one of the other classics is the allegory of the cave, where the images on the wall from the fire are reality, because you're trapped in this mind cave. And then a good professor at New York University gives you the key to the door, or shows you the way out. And you step outside into the world, and there's a sun in the sky, and clouds, and ground, and mountains, and trees, and forests, and oceans that never existed before. Because he gave you a means to escape that cave. And that just drives them terribly, terribly mad. But that's okay. It's the great game. We play it. And that old song was, teach your children well. You couldn't find a better man to teach your children well. And if things are on Zoom, well, I guess you can be a student in his class from pretty much anywhere. And, you know, maybe even this is an opportunity for a bigger university to have a whole program in things that he's doing to teach as many people as possible critical thinking skills, to save us from the abyss of war, economic collapse, scientific debauchery, or anything else that's coming along, so we don't step into another big trap and pay consequences that are just too dear. It's a shame you don't have 240 people in your class. Oh, mine was crowded because it was in a lecture theater. There were hundreds of us. And I just enjoyed it because it's the way out. So continue with your story, Mark, and tell us how the Inquisition started putting you in chains.
Yeah, okay. Well, just to sum up, they accused me of hate speech, mounting attacks on students and others in our community, advocating for an unsafe learning environment, hammering my students with non-evidence-based arguments, and microaggressions and aggressions. Okay. Well, speaking of non-evidence-based arguments, their whole letter was just a pack of either lies or delusions. I mean, if they had decided to craft a description of my teaching completely opposite the way I actually teach, they couldn't have done a better job. I mean, I was flabbergasted by this. I couldn't believe what I was saying. And I couldn't believe that the dean went right ahead and ordered the review without even talking to me first. He told me one significant thing when I reached out to him. He said that the university lawyers had told him to do it, which I think is significant. So, the review ostensibly began. He told me it would end by the end of the semester, which would be mid-December. But as far as I know, it's still going on. I haven't heard anything. If there even is a review, which I now doubt, because nobody has ever said to me, I heard from the dean's office. At any rate, leaving that aside, I went through my colleague's letter with a fine-tooth comb. And this is where it gets quite dramatic. And I wrote a point-by-point rebuttal. Every single claim they made was false. I pointed it out. I asked for a retraction and an apology. I heard nothing. That's the way it works at NYU. You just get radio silence. I sent a follow-up a week later. I asked them to retract it by November 20th and apologize. Crickets, nothing. So I decided to sue them for libel. 25 colleagues signed it, so about 7 or 8 in the department did not sign it. I am suing 19 of the 25 because I'm not suing the junior faculty who signed it, because they may have felt pressured, I don't know. But I am suing the 19 who know better, they know me. This is inexcusable that they would slander me like this. I take my teaching very, very seriously. And as I told the dean, I said, many students are quite willing to speak up on my behalf, and I'm going to ask them to write letters to you for your review. And he said, okay. So, you know, over 50 have come in, well over 50. And incidentally, your listeners can find all the documents for this lawsuit, everything, on my website at markcrispinmiller.com, where they can also sign up to get these daily emails I send out with all kinds of very important, often urgent information that's been blacked out or distorted. If you sign up to get those emails, news from underground, I recommend you pick the daily digest option so you just get one email a day. At any rate, I'm suing them. They filed a motion to dismiss. We responded with a brief and my own affidavit, and they replied. Again, all these documents are on my website. And I strongly recommend that people read the exhibits that my colleagues submitted to prove that they were not lying about me, because all they're doing is doubling down. Oh, they also threw in that I hurl racial slurs at, students of color. I mean, this is psychotic. This is really insane. But read their exhibits, because their exhibits are mostly their own internal email exchanges about me, which they've been trading for years without my even knowing it. I mean, really, six or seven of them are just, obsessed with me and hate what I do. I didn't even know they knew what I do, and have been, variously working to make something like this happen for quite some time. Well, the point is this. They have done me demonstrable harm. I mean, I was supposed to teach these two film courses or two sections of the film course this semester, but I ended up in the ER over January because I have Lyme disease, and I've been fighting it for years, and this ordeal definitely made my health much worse. I'm on medical leave now, but that's not the main point. I mean, I'm certainly angry about that, but what really matters to me is the fact that this kind of thing has simply got to stop, all right? This kind of cancel culture, accusations of conspiracy theory, accusations of putting students at risk from death by COVID just because I suggested they look into the scientific rationale for the mask mandates. So this kind of free and independent thought is a hazard to your health. I mean, what has happened to higher education that you can't even question anything without being accused of endangering the children, this is a complete betrayal of what the university is supposed to be about, and it is all too typical today. We're living in a very, very scary time, and all over the West, all over this citadel of the First Amendment, the United States, the West that has always prided itself on free speech, unlike those closed societies in the Soviet Union or in Nazi Germany, it is feeling increasingly like those dystopian systems with every passing day. And it seems to me that if we're not going to teach our young people to try to tell truth from lie and think for themselves, then higher education is nothing more than, training for compliance. Democracy is a joke. And science is completely impossible. So this is very important. I have a GoFundMe page. I'm raising money for my lawsuit. Donations go into an escrow account that my lawyer manages. I'm trying to raise $100,000 because I expect this to be a long and costly process. So if anybody wants to find that page, they can go to the GoFundMe and do a search on Mark Crispin Miller and libel, and they'll find it. And I'll be very grateful for any help you can give me. Or if you're strapped, it would be great if you just signed the petition at change.org. But my point here is that we've all got to stand up and say no, however we can. This is my way of doing it. But it's got to be done, or we're really lost.
Oh, indeed, indeed. And we can't lose you, and we can't lose people like you, because this is the whole crux of any sort of freedom. And I just took it as a given when I was younger, that it was there like the air we breathe. And I didn't realize that those powerful enemies, foreign and domestic, that they talk about, so often are so firmly entrenched in many, many places. And like chameleons, they look like us. There's an old Turkish saying, the forest accepted the axe in among the trees, thinking that his handle was made of wood and he was one of them. But in reality, he was the axe, and he cut down the forest. And this is a mistake we make over and over and over again, to let those axes come in among the forest. The young should be protected and taken care of. And it, you, when you talk about the Nazis, I remember, you know, something Hitler said that I read in a book a long time ago, too. He says, I don't care about you. You will grow old, you will wither, you will die. But I've got your children, and they're in my schools. And I think they know that. And they've got your children, and they are in their schools. That's why homeschooling is so important. Or using discernment to find a good place to send your children, one that probably isn't so hot, is Hunter Biden is going to teach a university class on fake news at Tulane University. And, you know, in my comments to share with people, you know, I say, well, I'd probably do a filmmaking course for troubled youth, too, to make up for some of his other past sins. And you'll only find those on the dark net. But the course is supposed to be called Media Polarization and Public Policy Impacts, with all kinds of speakers from some of the big places, Washington Post, The New Yorker, Fox, the White House, Coronavirus Response Coordinator under Trump, Face the Nation Monitor, moderator, New York Times, and a professor of political science at Howard University. So what they're just doing to you is just saying, like, you know, the whole concept of fake news is pretty much all news is fake because it's all propaganda to one sort or another, but it's to have the ability to discern the chaff from the wheat and pick what you feel is right. And sometimes you'll pick wrong, and you won't know it until a little while where the road gets bumpy and you start to realize, I went down the wrong road. I'm just going to pull over, turn around, and go back, find another road. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of life. It's part of the learning curve, and that should be encouraged. But to be in this group thought think is just so totally Orwellian. It is absolutely chilling, really. And you know, we're very blessed and fortunate that we have people that not just teach it, but are prepared to stand up for it, because many probably just scurry away and let the enemy take the field. And this field has our children in it. And that's a terrible thing.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. Well, you know, they're, I mean, this is a bit of a leap, but one of the very dangerous things that's going on now is that the state and corporate powers are trying to erode informed consent. They're trying to weaken parental authority or parental rights, you know, to protect one's children from, you know, vaccination, forcible vaccination, even radical medical intervention in the sexual development of children. You know, these are things that I have written about online. I'm very concerned about this. I am on the board of something called the Alliance for Human Research Protection, which is all about, you know, bolstering informed consent. It was founded by Holocaust survivor Vera Sharav, who's seen all this happen before, you know. And that's one of the things that actually infuriates my colleagues. The reason they accuse me of hate speech is because of a few things I've written online questioning transgender medicine. I have nothing whatsoever against transgender persons. I'm talking about transgender medicine, transgender ideology. I think this is something that should be discussed, you know. That is an extremely radical and irreversible kind of medical interference in the sexual development of underaged people. And for that, I'm called transphobic and accused of hate speech. Although it's only stuff I've written about online anyway, I don't teach it. But they conflated these few, you know, stray writings of mine with my classroom practice. The sleight of hand is their way of defining me as hateful, you know. And that's the hate speech cudgel. It's just one of many ways that's now available for shutting down dissent, turning off inconvenient inquiry, you know. The charge of conspiracy theory is another. And again, the accusation of threatening people with harm by questioning the COVID orthodoxy. All three of these are the most widely used means of silencing dissidents, and they hit me with all three, you know. I kind of hit the censorship trifecta with my colleague's letter. So, again, you know, if we say no, if we don't let them get away with it, if we force them to grapple with the content of what you're saying as opposed to just slandering you, we'll all be much better off, seems to me.
Oh, indeed, indeed. The whole concept of that comes from the Lenin School of Political Warfare, is just to label your adversary in debate with some tar and feathers words to make him look bad so that you get out of the debate, you know. So we can go back a long way just to say flat out heretic, you're a heretic, and or come up with these other trifecta labels that they're putting on you. And we just never seem to have enough people who want to question what some of the realities are and to say, well, why is all of a sudden is this an issue that's never been an issue before? And, you know, since you're a professor who goes into film studies, too, one of my favorites that, you know, if I was dictator and every school child would see the movie Network, because with the vast dominion of dollars, speech, and then Howard Beale talking about TV and what it really means and telling everyone to turn it off, that it's an illusion, and such like that, I think are probably two of the most fundamental scenes in movies that should ever be broadly understood to teach young people what it's all about. And it's done tongue-in-cheek, but it is right on the money. And this is the world that exists, really. And one of my big mentors is Marshall McLuhan, the great educator at the University of Toronto. And one of his big sayings was to educate means to produce immunity against the television, probably the ultimate weapon. And I make jokes about things so it goes across easier. I forgot to use this one in my monologue earlier, but we have a great God developed by the media, the God cathode ray tube and his misbegotten son flat screen. And they control the narrative. They tell you what to think. And when you hear, you must obey, because that's the great God cathode ray tube, as manifested by whatever munchkins manifest these things. And by and large, it's a false god, a false idol. And we should be basically doing the opposite to what that thing tells us. But that was one of the other great sayings of McLuhan, too. We live invested in an electric information environment that is quite as imperceptible to us as water is to a fish. So most people have no idea they're bathed in this propaganda.
Right.
Matrix. And when you tell somebody that the first time, it's kind of shocking, you know, because it's like you're on another planet. Someone's telling you that your reality isn't reality, that it's something different. And it puts you into a little bit of shock. But once you start feeling around, it's like you grow new eyes, or some people say the veil is removed, and then you see it. Because once those critical thinking skills come to play, you do. You get a new vision, and you understand. And you see the lies quickly. It doesn't take too long when you have those skills. Maybe inadvertently you were using Plato's laws of logic all along, and you just see inconsistency after inconsistency after inconsistency. And I have to be dealing with the ignoble lie, the lie of the state, because if it was really done for the benefit of the state, it would be okay. But when a small cabal, for lack of a better word, gets the power of state and does it for their own profit or their own motives or their own prejudices, then there is no noble lie. The only thing that should really survive is the truth. And we have a man who's teaching young people, and probably old people too, to find the truth, to discern. There's nothing wrong with that. It's like me giving you a compass in the forest or a geolocator so you can triangulate your way out. so you're not lost in the forest. What's wrong with that? But other people want you lost in the forest for some reason.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing.
No, it isn't. And I want to make an observation, if I have, you know, a little time to point this out. There's an interesting irony at work here. You know, my colleagues think of themselves as, you know, very radical social justice warriors. You know, they stand up for the victims of society, et cetera. And they cast me as kind of an oppressor, you know, kind of a patriarch, this older white male who's bullying these poor students and et cetera. What they don't really understand is that the reason why NYU's lawyers told the dean to proceed is that NYU has a very heavy financial investment in the whole vaccine industrial complex and in the whole COVID narrative. They want to get rid of me because, you know, I have somehow emerged as a fairly prominent academic critic of this latest barrage of propaganda, the whole biofascist model of propaganda, which is a direct threat to our freedoms and our health. There's nothing whatsoever radical about NYU's interests in all this. Their interests are corporate and financial. They are perfectly happy to take advantage of the kind of social justice zealotry of my colleagues and kind of use that as a weapon against me. And my colleagues, you know, are clueless about this. They think they're playing on the side of right and goodness and progressivism and so on. But, you know, this is not the only place where university administrations and boards of trustees actually welcome a certain amount of faculty intolerance, because it's a way to keep dissident faculty in line.
Indeed, indeed. Unfortunately, we're reaching the end of our line. We're coming to the end. We want to thank you, Mark Crispin Miller. One thing I learned over the years is the higher they jump, the closer you are to the truth. But I don't have the math skills to put it into a formula. And thank you for making them jump, because now a lot more people are going to learn from you. God bless you. Good luck in your lawsuit. Power Hour Nation salutes you.
Thank you very much, George. I appreciate it.
And thank you, audience. We'll see you next time. I think I'm on next week, Friday. Bye.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.